Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good morning. Chris Deakle here with Business Radio X. We have a great cast of people in our studio this morning. We have the UPS stores, we have Sandler Sales Training, and we have a fun place called PlayWorks. That sounds like the company I should work for.
PlayWorks.
Come on, join us.
So I'd like to get started this morning with you, Jim, with UPS Stores, Jim McElroy. You've been with them for quite a while, and you're a very successful set of franchises, although I don't know that people know that the UPS Store is a franchise.
Yeah, we do. And, Chris, listen, thanks a lot for having us here this morning. Yeah, we do get that. It's very similar, I'm sure, to what Lisa and Meredith see as well with Starbucks and some of the other companies. FedEx, some people think that they're franchise or not franchise. But, yeah, the UPS Store, it started off as mailboxes, et cetera, back in the late 70s, went public in 1980 and was bought out by UPS back in 2000. So we've had a long-time relationship with UPS, and now as the UPS Store, we've been very successful and thankful for it.
Yeah, do people know that you're a franchise? Do they understand that?
Sometimes they don't, and I guess we've been fortunate enough to where we've got a lot of people that are interested in the UPS Store and don't have to get out and tell everybody who we are because they know the brand. I guess the big question a lot of times is knowing, hey, that it is a franchise opportunity that you can buy and own it yourself. So, but look, we've got over 100 metropolitan Atlanta locations, so we've been successful enough with that, and people see us around, and we're just real fortunate with it. So.
Well, that's super, Jim. Who should consider being a UPS Store franchisee?
Well, look, if you want to own your own business, great. I mean, it's one of those things to where we're open to interviewing anybody that would like to have a UPS Store. But the real key person is one that is customer service oriented. Lisa and I were talking earlier before the show started about how important customer service is, and it's just a very customer service oriented business. So you don't have to have this wonderful business background where you've had all of this experience. In fact, sometimes a lot of times we want to have people that we can train that doesn't feel like that they know it all. If you know what I'm saying. But we're that person that is a very customer service oriented. That's the main type of franchisee that we're looking for.
Now, who is your typical franchisee?
I think that it's someone that has somewhat of a sales background. I think that if you're good with people and can manage your people the right way. That's the real key for us, and I look for a franchisee the same way I look for an employee. I own a store in North Georgia as well, and if they can talk to me during the interview and come across being very nice, I know they're going to be a successful employee, and I also know that they're on the franchise side that they're going to be a successful franchisee. So that's the type of person that we're looking for. I tell you who makes wonderful franchisees for us are veterans.
Really?
Yeah, and we have a very good veterans program. We're very influential with the IFA, International Franchise Association, on recruiting veterans. But it's just the fact that the veteran is someone that is disciplined. They know how to go through the proper procedures without trying to figure it out on their own, and just wonderful franchisees for us.
Fantastic. There are so many veterans that are coming out of the service over the next couple of years as we wind down in some of the places we've been. Does that present an opportunity for you? And if so, how should you veterans and the people that help them get in touch with you?
Well, yes. We do have quite a few people that are coming to us that are now looking for a business opportunity. At the beginning of the year, our president and CEO, along with the first lady, announced that we were going to give away 10 free franchise units, and which we've done, and I think we've went ahead and doubled that and still have a few of those left. But regardless of anything else, if you're a veteran with the UPS store, you get a $10,000 discount off of what the franchise fee is. And they could go to the upsstore.com. They can call us at our office at 770-645-2513 in the extensions 204 for myself or anyone there at the office.
I understand UPS stores actually had originally given away several franchises to veterans as part of their outreach to the veteran community. Is that right?
That's right. And it's just been just amazing. It's amazing to watch and great to have them as part of our organization. The last one we opened up was at Eglin Air Force Base right outside of Destin, Florida. I'm sure a lot of your listeners would like to be down in Destin, Florida, but it's just been extremely successful program, Chris.
I see. Veterans are typically very well trained, and they do follow instructions. And
they got a little money.
And they have a little money, unlike the rest of us. But doesn't UPS stores have or UPS corporate have a financing program that will help?
Yes, absolutely. That's more available to our established owners. If you're already in our system, we have a very good system for franchising. For financing. But there is several banks that we work with, same as any other major franchise that loves to finance our stores. Financing is unlike a lot of things of what your listeners have heard through the media and everything else. Because I hear it from them when they come in and they say, "Well, there's no financing available." I hear that read that in the newspaper, and I hear it on Diane Sawyer every night. You know, but bottom line is there's banks out there that want to finance good franchises, and we've got several financing options for them. So.
And you have quite a track record. How many stores are in your system now?
Well, in our areas that we handle throughout the southeastern areas, it's about 300 and almost 370 stores. But nationally, it's just about 6,000.
So you have quite a track record a bank can look at to determine that a franchisee will make a good prospect, that the stores have earnings records that support loans. So unlike a lot of franchises, you really come with a lot of advantages, I imagine.
Well, absolutely. The track record is a big part of it because, you know, the bank can look and see that, they're not having to guess who we are. And we do have a track record. There's two opportunities available, you know, with the UPS store. One is, you know, a new store. One's an established store. And if the established store opportunity is one for somebody, then, you know, the bank has a track record they could look right at and see, you know, exactly what that business has done if someone's making that acquisition.
Well, tell me, Jim, what does it cost to get into a UPS store? Where are the costs? And what percentage of those are usually paid in cash to start with, and what percent are financed?
Well, a new store, Chris, is going to cost it's right about $160,000 in hard costs, and that includes everything, training, you name it. It's the $160,000 is the startup cost. We suggest about $40,000 to $60,000 in working capital on top of that. So altogether, about $200,000 to $215,000 is for a new store. Established store is usually much more expensive. You've got cash flow associated with it, and we have some pretty good resale values. Not a lot of stores on the market for sale today. I'm sure you probably see that with a lot of other people that you interview. I assume it's one of those things that in the economy that we're in today, you just don't have a lot of opportunities or businesses out there on the market for sale. We do have a couple, but the cash flow on the stores is really what we determine as being the price, and usually that's much more expensive than what it costs to open up a new store.
I see. And what are the resale values for a UPS store that's established?
Well, we're very fortunate to have some very good resale values. They're typically in the range of about 3 to 4 times what the cash flow is from the business. If you end up with whatever the number is, I don't want to get into specifics. If you end up with whatever the number is, let's just say it's $125,000 in cash flow. If you take that number, times 4, on the high side, that's what the store value, our store values are worth. And we're very fortunate, to have some good values for the UPS store.
So you wouldn't really think about that store as being an asset, but it's a great way to build a financial nest egg and an asset for the future.
No doubt about it. And the tax advantages, too, of just owning your own business alone. So absolutely. If you build it up, your cash flowing, and you've got a way to have a very good nest egg when you're done working as hard as you do.
So. Well, speaking of working hard, who are the customers that make you work hard?
Well, you've got your typical customer. I would say is the type of customer that you is the one that would be in line at the post office. So you've got that person, and they come in on a regular basis all day long. But our true customer, and the one I think that we touch more than any other customer, is the one that's the small office, home office type of customer. They're the ones that's the road warrior. It's the person that's been in their home working very hard all day long, and they use us as their office. Now, your wonderful studios here at Atlanta Business Radio X driving in, I see all these large companies, around here, and certainly we do business with a lot of these types of companies, but on a more segmented basis. They may have their own UPS account, but we can go in and do specialty packaging for them and put it on accounts. And we also have national accounts too, so companies like Apple or AT&T. If your iPhone goes out, they're going to direct you into the nearest UPS store and ship that iPhone back to Apple or wherever Apple decides they want to take it. So, but our key customer is that small office, home office type of customer.
Yeah. What kind of services are in UPS stores? We sort of think of them as being primarily shipping and packages and documents, but what else do you provide?
Well, you're absolutely right, Chris, when you say a lot of people don't know some of the other things that we do. And if you look at the vast array of business services, your real core group is your packaging and shipping, mailbox service, and then document services. So we've done a real big job on pushing document services, and we do a good job of it. We trained our franchisees very well, among other types of competitors that you might see in our industry that do the same thing. We're very customer service oriented, and we'll look at those smaller jobs on the print side that some of these larger companies don't do. So, but then you've got office supplies, mailing supplies, fax, notary, those types of things. But our core profit centers are the ones that are mailbox service, packing and shipping, and document services.
I see. If I have Aunt Mary's grand piano, I need to send back to her in Peoria. Can you handle that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, we may not package it up in our store, but we may have somebody. We'll have someone show up at your door that says, we're here to pick up Aunt is it Aunt Fanny?
Aunt Martha, take your choice.
Your aunt's piano to ship it to Peoria, and you won't even have to handle it.
Really?
Yeah. And our franchisees make a good margin on those types of things. And UPS Freight picks them up.
Oh, I see. So this for if I were a company and I had a specialty piece of equipment that I needed to send that needs to be crated and freighted somewhere, then we don't have that in our company, the ability to do that. So they could call a UPS store and have arrange all of that.
We could pack up your entire studio here, Chris, and ship it wherever you wanted us to ship.
There have been people that have suggested we should do that. tell me, in order to do all of this, how do you train your franchisees? What do you have to put somebody through before you turn them loose to run their store?
Well, they've got 4 weeks formal training. Training wow. never stops. I think that's the same with any other major franchise. I'm sure that what you'll hear from Meredith and Lisa is that, look, you know, you want to get your franchisees trained the best way possible and keep them trained. And so 4 weeks, you've got 2 weeks of in-store training at one of our training stores here in Atlanta. You know, if you're in North Carolina, it'd be the same scenario. You did train in-store. And then you got 2 weeks at UPS University in San Diego. But the training is ongoing. We've got networking meetings on a regular basis for our franchisees that are very well attended. We've got support people out in the field that are good at what they do. They've either been very successful franchise owners that we pay to support with them so they just don't have somebody running around with a clipboard. There's ways to keep your employees trained online through several different sources to keep your training ongoing.
Quite a program and well supported with a great company with a brand name that people recognize. For the people that have heard this and say, gosh, I'd like to look into that, how do they get in touch with you, Jim?
Well, let's start with the telephone number. And we're not very far from your studios here in Alpharetta and Roswell. But the telephone number is 770-645-2513. And my personal extension is 204. Any of your listeners want to call and ask questions, they're welcome to. The UPSstore.com is a wonderful source of information, and you're able to access and get to us via the UPSstore.com as well. So.
Well, great, Jim. Thank you. Can you remain in the studio for our other guests?
Of course. My pleasure, Chris. Yeah,
thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, Meredith, you are with Playworks Group. Tell us about the Playworks Group and what you do. It sounds like a fun business.
It is, Chris. Thanks for having us here today. We're so delighted. Playworks Group has been around since 2002, but we've been working before that under different titles and that kind of thing. But we do corporate team building events. So when you're looking for your group to have a good time, but also find ways to connect and maybe get to know each other a little bit better, work on some communication skills, some problem solving skills in a fun manner using interactive learning principles, we're the guys to call.
Well, tell me, how does that work?
In terms of the actual team building?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, we work with our clients and create opportunities for them to interact in a different way than they do in the office setting. So, for instance, a UPS or a UPS store might call us and say, hey, we've got some new hires and we want to integrate them into our team. We've just acquired some new skills within the or new products, and we want to train them, but we want to do it in a fun way. We can work to customize a program that would allow them to do that, that would allow people to get to know each other, again, outside the formal office setting where maybe it's a little bit harder, a little bit more uncomfortable, and people feel a little forced. This is a fun way. If you think about the way that we interact in our lives outside of work, we're looking to have a good time, to meet interesting people, to learn new things about them in a fun way, you know, at a cocktail party or at a restaurant or at a theater event or that kind of thing. That's exactly what we're doing. We're recreating that in the work setting.
I see. Give us some examples of the kinds of events that you have held for companies so that people kind of understand what a team building event looks like.
Absolutely. Obviously, there's some very traditional team building events. We actually have steered clear of some of the ropes courses and that kind of thing, A, because of liability, but B, because frankly, people, you know, don't want to do that. They're a little scared. They're, you know, you want to put people outside their comfort zone, but you don't want to freak them out. So we have, am I right?
Am I right? Like a good idea.
Yeah. And honestly, a lot of those things are very good for individual personal growth, so getting outside of your boundaries. But in terms of the group setting, you know, some of the wacky Olympics, you know, corporate Olympics, some of the like build your own vehicle out of PVC pipe, duct tape, lawnmower wheels, that kind of thing. That's been a longstanding popular event over the years. Also, some of the charitable events. We do a lot, probably 50% of our business now involves some sort of charitable give back where we are allowing groups to work together and build their team, but then at the end of the day, they're doing something to impact the community, whether it's building stuffed animals that they then donate to a children's shelter, or whether they are putting together kits for people who are moving out of homelessness and into new apartments, new homes, that kind of thing. So a lot of opportunities there to do something both for your team but also for the community at large, which really leaves a longer lasting impact, frankly. People remember that and remember making a difference, and they feel good about it at the end of the day. Yes, they had a good time, but they've really done something beneficial to their community. But we do a lot of the fun stuff too, you know, where they're building a putt-putt course, where they're, you know, playing minute to win it games, if you've watched that show on the television, a lot of that kind of game show feel, but we create larger group atmosphere for that. So it's not just one competitor, it's the whole group.
I see. What is it about a corporation or a company that avails themselves of your services that keeps them from having this kind of fun culture inside?
You know, that's why I left the corporate culture however long ago, 20 years ago.
If you leave, you know about yes. Jim and the UPS doors.
Honestly, you know, people are so heavily tasked these days. You know, the economy has been down. People are frustrated. People are maybe trapped in a job that they don't like, but they feel like they can't leave. Or, you know, they're being asked to do the job of three people where they used to only do one person's job. Now they've got multiple roles, multiple hats they have to wear. The stressors are very high. You know, maybe they didn't get their Christmas bonus this year or their holiday bonus. You know, there's a lot of stress within the corporate workplace that frankly didn't exist, you know, 10, 15, 20 years mm-hmm. ago when money was rolling in, you know, for everybody. And so people are calling us because they're starting to focus back on retaining their employees, and they realize they have to give back, as I'm sure Lissa will tell us, when it comes to training, you have to invest in your people. That's your single biggest asset in any organization. And frankly, all that stress within the workplace, people are having a lot more conflict. You're spending longer hours. You're not with your family. So you resent the time that you spend. So maybe there's a little bit of more friction within the workplace than there used to be. People are told, you know, keep things professional. Don't be personal. We're losing that personal touch within the workplace. And so this brings that back. At the end of the day, we're all human. We all like to play. If you go back to our premise as an organization, play is not just for children. Play is a native language inherent to us all. If you look at every culture across the world, people play, and that's where you really grow, honestly, and learn. So,
our maxim has always been: if you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong.
Absolutely, could not agree with you more, Chris. Could not agree with you more.
But we've created these artificial situations where a company like yours can come in and help kind of rejuvenate people and bring them together where they can see each other as individuals, I presume.
Absolutely. And the places where we're seeing the most success are where we're going back again and again with that same group, so that it's not just a one-time, one-off opportunity and they think, oh, we've solved our corporate culture, now we're a fun place to work. Instead, the corporation realizes this is something that we need to do on a long-term basis, or even better yet, we need to integrate, as you said, into the workplace, you know, whether it's, you know, having an area in the office where they can go, you know, play ping pong. Yes, that sounds kind of juvenile, but people need to let off steam and get their brains kind of re-engaged, and play does that.
Oh, and all work and no play.
Exactly.
I believe is the way that starts.
Exactly.
What size company buys your services?
You know, we've worked with groups just within the last few weeks here that were size 6 and size 1,000. We've worked with 1,000 people and 6 people just within the last few weeks. So all sorts of different types of, you know, shapes and sizes of groups. Absolutely, you know, within our wheelhouse, you know, and you obviously have to customize. These are not cookie cutter programs. These are not, oh, this is what we do. You buy our services. This is, we work with you to create something that works for your group. So, you know, for instance, it's a smaller work team and they work together every day. These people actually do know each other fairly well. So you have to kind of dig deep to create some opportunities for them to learn something new about one another and how they operate. Versus the group of 1,000 where they're shaking hands throughout the whole event and introducing themselves. Very different dynamic, certainly, but and different types of groups need us, whether it's, you know, so, sort of the sales and marketing teams coming together with the operations. You know, that's inherent conflict right there because you've got the sales team saying, oh, yeah, we can deliver, and the operations team saying, you said what? So that's a great opportunity to work together and maybe see each other's perspective from another way and then communicate how that we can work better together to, again, like I said, you know, a work team that works together on a daily basis, but how can they function and use each other's strengths as they move throughout their daily tasks.
For a small company, what kind of event would you hold for them?
You know, we just did a really interesting one with a group from Cox Enterprises where they actually created their own scents. So we worked with a local parfumerie, if you want to be French. She was speaking French to us frequently. And we actually had them create their own team scent. So they went with a more unisex scent, but then they marketed that product and packaged it and went through their whole sales cycle of, okay, how would we deliver this? And so it was kind of, you know, an apprentice-esque type event where they were creating a new product from scratch, and then how would we carry this through, and what would it look like, and what would it feel like, and how would people present it? And we did it in a sort of semi-competition where there were two groups, very, you know, only 6 people, and they had a blast doing it, and they really, the feedback has been very positive from, this was something that we never would have thought of doing, and this is something that we really got to see a different side of each other in. So very effective program.
You brought up the perennial conflict between sales and the rest of the company.
Oh, yes. We see that a lot.
You see that a lot. How do you bring those two groups together?
You know, like I said, seeing each other's perspective and maybe putting them on the other side of things. So maybe you put the operations team in a position where they have to sell a product, and the marketing people, this is maybe the more stick it to them kind of thing, but where they have to deliver. You know, and so maybe you create an artificial situation, again, in a playful environment where they have to create a new product and they're the ones having to deliver. And suddenly, you know, it's turned. Another opportunity for them is we've done a video project where they create kind of a day in the life and where they have to express the stressors that they go through and do it in a comedic way. But then when the other group sees that presentation or that video or that skit, suddenly the light bulbs go off. We did it one time with a group that was international. And so we had, I think, 7 time zones represented. And the funniest one was the group furthest away, of course, who had to act out the fact that they wake up in the middle of the night for their conference calls. And suddenly everybody went, oh, no wonder they're so quiet. They're still asleep. But it was really enlightening for that team to realize that what they were asking was a little bit different for that group than the other groups. So again, just putting people in each other's shoes and seeing from in a fun environment and a playful environment that, you know, work is a different thing for them than it is for us.
Let's see it through the other person's eyes.
Exactly.
So in working with a company, it sounds like once they get the idea that this makes a lot of sense because they kind of sense we need to bring these groups together. You know, how do you find those people?
In terms of our marketing, we've done a lot in the association world and specifically Meeting Professionals International, the Georgia chapter. I've been very involved. I was actually am a past president and served on the board for 5 years there. So that's been our primary method of marketing, doing things like this. We're very involved in the North Fulton Chamber of Commerce. And just getting out there, word of mouth and referrals, probably 90% of our business is through some sort of referral or repeat business.
And that's the very best kind because
we love it.
We love it. Yeah, if it was for a salesman's dream come true, a referral.
Exactly, exactly. And we get a lot of that because people walk away happy. They've had a good time. They've learned something. They've learned something about their coworkers, and they want to come back for more.
Well, super. Can you remain for our last guest, Alyssa?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. Alyssa, welcome to the show. You are right in your wheelhouse here, I believe, talking about sales. We've put you in the great place between two salespeople.
I know it. I'm so pleased to be
here. How are they doing? That's the first question.
So far, they look like they're doing great. I love what Meredith says because I think I tell all of my clients, you know, adults are just kids in big bodies.
Absolutely,
it's true.
Absolutely true.
It's true.
I've been accused of never having grown up.
I don't plan
That's
to.
That's good.
Me either.
That's a good thing.
I'd have to be responsible then. That wouldn't do at all. So Alyssa is with Sandler Training, which is one of the premier sales training companies in the U.S. Tell us about Sandler and the services, because you go way beyond sales, I believe.
We do, as a matter of fact. Sandler started back in the late 60s. David Sandler started the organization and began franchising in the early to mid-70s. And at this point, we've grown to over 250 franchises worldwide. There are a lot of people who don't know that Sandler is a global organization, but in fact, we are. It's kind of neat because it allows us to have tremendous reach, but because we are very individual franchises, it allows us to, like Meredith said, customize. It's important. If you're going to do something that's meaningful to people, it has to be very specific to their needs. So we work in the areas, primarily there are three of them, all of them centered around what drives the economic engine of a company, and those are management, sales, and customer service, which we refer to as customer care.
Well, what are the issues you find in each of those three segments?
Oh, my goodness. I don't think we have enough time to cover all of them.
It's that bad.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we focus most of the time on small to mid-sized companies because that's where we have the ability to have the most immediate and greatest impact. So when you're looking at management challenges within a small to mid-sized company, a lot of times what we find is the business owner is also managing the sales team and trying to run the rest of the company, and they haven't ever had any training in sales management, and that becomes very quickly a challenge for them. Plus, they've got so many balls in the air, it's tough to juggle all of them. Sales, there are lots of different ways you could look at that, but generally, especially right now in today's economic environment, we're finding a lot of salespeople who are trying to deal with price objections. Economy's tight, everybody's watching their pennies, and so anyone who's selling anything has to be able to demonstrate value. And if they can't do that, they're going to get pushed to price. That's not someplace any salesperson I know wants to sell. So we help them develop a way of understanding an individual's needs so that they can sell to need. If you're selling to need, you can demonstrate value. If you're selling on price, that's called an order taker.
Or a commodity.
Or a commodity, absolutely. And then you end up getting pushed to lowest price. Customer service is an area that we've just, in the past about 3 years, really developed this offering to a much greater extent. It's been really rewarding because we see folks bringing in new business, and they're doing a great job of that, but they forget to look at the back door and realize that all that great revenue they're bringing in the front door is leaving out the back door. So understanding, one of the most powerful things I've heard from clients relative to the customer service training is you've helped our customer service people. We call them frontline people. And it's empowering them and helping them understand they are the face of the company to many, many of their clients. And giving them the self-worth and the realization that they really do matter. And when you boost their confidence, it allows them to deliver on an entirely different level. That's been really rewarding to see.
It's interesting because people may be successful in bringing people in the front door, but when things go wrong, isn't that your chance as an organization to, A, save a sale, make a customer for life, and have them tell their friends good things rather than tell six friends bad things?
It's absolutely true. I always tell all of my clients, if you do it well, they may tell one or two people. If you do it badly, they're going to tell 10.
And with social media now, they may tell the world.
Absolutely, absolutely true.
Yeah, you can't hide anymore. You have to excel.
Well, and frequently when companies or individual salespeople make mistakes, it is their opportunity to redeem themselves. And when the customer sees them work harder to fix a problem, bring a solution, it gains them a level of confidence in that vendor or supplier that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
Well, let's circle back to the core thing that we're talking about, sales. How many people do you find really have the knowledge to be a good salesperson? I mean, they've been trained the right way. They understand the process.
Well, you know what? There are a lot of good processes out there. That might be surprising to hear me say, since I'm very, very committed to Sandler as a methodology, but I am a firm believer any good salesperson follows some methodology, whatever it is. But being intentional about the way you go to market allows you to repeat your successes, allows you to stay on track, and allows you to serve your customer well. Unfortunately, there are a lot of salespeople out there who've never had any kind of training, and so they, you know, get a phone book and a pat on the back and a go get 'em tiger, and they're left to their own devices, which can be not so good sometimes. So just the ability to follow a methodology and be intentional and be customer-focused makes a huge difference.
And that's part of what you train for. If you have a sales force and they're not performing, do you do an assessment or anything like that to help the owner understand where the problems are?
Great question. As a matter of fact, we do. I recommend to anyone who's just getting started with us that we assess them on two levels, one on a behavioral level and one from a communication style standpoint. Those two together allow us to identify gaps, because that's really what we're working on, is we're trying to close those gaps, help them close those gaps. And understanding what your team looks like and what each individual contributor looks like allows us to address team gaps. It also allows us to help management focus and sometimes move folks around. For anyone who's a fan of, as I am, the right people in the right seats on the bus, it's sometimes about just jiggling those people a little bit so you get them in the right seat on the bus so that they can contribute. They're happier, back to retention. If they're happier, they produce at a higher level, they benefit, and the company benefits, and the customers benefit.
Interesting. Now, we know that this works for businesses. What about people that are coming out of school?
You know, it's interesting. We, about a year and a half ago, joined forces with a college in South Florida. It's the first one that I'm aware of, although I've recently become aware that Kennesaw also offers a degree in sales. That's not something that was around when I was growing up. We won't talk about how long ago that was. But
we were still using, you know, quill pens when I went to school.
But the Huizenga School of Business down in South Florida actually offers Sandler as part of their curriculum. So there are a handful of graduates coming out of colleges today who are being exposed to Sandler or some other type of methodology for selling, which is really encouraging to me.
That's really interesting. You know, what would something like Sandler do for the typical graduate who is in the market now, they're trying to get a job? What would that do for somebody that has no idea, I mean, about sales?
Well, I don't know about these guys, but it occurs to me that when you're interviewing, you're doing the biggest sales job you'll ever do because you're selling yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So their ability to follow a process for selling themselves serves them just as well as when they get out there in the work world and they have to sell something, a product or a service.
So it's a little bit like knowing how to do algebra. If you're an engineer, you're going to be in an environment where you have to sell. I mean, sales is not limited just to salespeople. I think it's everybody, no matter what level they are in a company.
I would agree with that, and I sometimes run into when we're dealing with the customer service folks within a company, and they'll say, "I'm not a salesperson." I always tell them, if you've ever been married or in any kind of relationship and you've convinced somebody to do something you wanted them to do that they didn't really want to do, that's sales. So don't tell me you're not a salesperson.
Yeah, it's just you aren't as professional as you could be.
Exactly.
And since you got them to take out the garbage and the rain...
You made a sale.
You made a sale. Think how much easier that would be if you had been formally trained.
You probably could have gotten it done a lot faster.
What happens, we were talking about customer service, and you said that you want an opportunity to save sales and keep customers for life, make them happy, and recommend you. What's the cost of losing a company?
It's such a good question. It's interesting because most companies have not taken the time to figure out and attach a real concrete dollar amount to that. And it's an exercise we put everyone through, both in our management program and our customer service program. So it's a unique number to every company. But if you look at the cost of acquisition, the cost of revenue over the course of the life of a customer, and then you understand that you're going to have to put those two numbers together. So now you've got to expend the time, energy, effort, and dollars to go acquire a new customer. And you've lost any annuity revenue that would have been associated with the old customer. Those two numbers put together get to be a pretty big number pretty quickly.
And then the social cost of what they say to other people.
Yes, and that, as you mentioned before, with social media is becoming much faster, and it gets blasted across all sorts of different mediums.
And it's there forever.
Can be, yeah.
The other thing I'd like to talk about is the culture of sales in a company. Usually you find that sales is viewed as sort of three-legged, people with horns and mystical powers to make people buy. Inside of the companies, how do you change the culture so that they see everybody as being in the sales business?
Really good question. It's interesting. When we first start working with companies, frequently sales is segmented. And as we were talking about earlier, sales and ops frequently butt heads.
Absolutely.
It's not productive for anyone. It's not productive for the company or the customer. Our ability to bring everyone into the fold, one of the things, interestingly enough, is we give them all a common language. And in doing so, it begins to create that culture so that they now feel like, oh, we've got this secret special language, but it's spoken throughout the company. It's interesting, too, to find that if you don't get leadership involved early and if they don't show a commitment, and I bet you see this, too, as well, they've got to move this forward. Yeah. Because if you don't, then they're just talking the talk. They're not walking the walk, and no one takes it seriously. It's seen as, oh, this is just another initiative. They'll get over it. In 6 months, it'll be gone. But the ability for leadership to step up and say, nope, this is an expectation we have. UPS is a great example of that. You guys are so consistent in your message. And so having that consistent culture throughout a company and having everyone focused on the customer makes a huge difference. And giving them the tools to be able to speak the same language, follow a system, makes that learning process a lot faster.
Yeah. In terms of the management structure, because these changes do come from the top. You lead, you don't push. And people read your body language. If they see you not committed, they sure won't be committed. So how do you change management so that they change their perspective on how they manage sales and the relationship between operations and sales?
It's interesting. Management, I can't change management if they don't want to be changed. I can help them see their gaps because just like sales, just like customer mm-hmm. service, and we all have blind spots, the assessments go a long way to helping do that on the front end because they're objective. It's not somebody sitting down and saying, you're bad or you don't do this. It's an objective tool that they can look at. The other thing that we help folks do, and this is not specific to management, but runs across all disciplines, is helping them understand we all have an identity and we all play different roles in life. Your identity, your self-worth, your self-image, all those things that are inside, those are unique and personal to you. But the roles that we play, whether it's manager or sales or customer service, are the areas that we can focus on and work on and get better. Giving them permission to separate those two helps them feel safer. We refer to that as IR theory, identity versus role. So we work on the role side of things, but help keep them safe from an identity standpoint to say, you're not a bad person, but here's some areas where you've got some gaps or maybe some blind spots. Let us help you identify those, and then let us give you some tools to help you overcome those, but we're still going to protect you as an individual.
Can we circle back to the assessments
sure.
that you're talking about? What kind of assessments are those, and how can you use them? Obviously, you're using them in kind of a diagnostic sense, but is there a proactive way you can use it before you ever hire someone?
Absolutely. It's interesting, the one of the assessments that we use, a lot of your listeners and probably some of the guests here will be familiar with, and that's a DISC. DISC is a communication style assessment. Very straightforward. People are always interested in their results because they want to know about themselves. So they're very accepting of it, and they're more accepting because there's no right or wrong. So I always tell people, you can't fail this one. Whatever you get's good. That lets them be a little bit more open to it. The other is a behavioral assessment. So it can be used as a hiring tool, but it can also be used as a management tool. So if we look at where folks have some weaknesses or opportunities for growth, then we identify those early, and we'll identify a couple of different ways that they can go about starting to work on those. One of the things I always caution people about is only pick one or two at a time. I don't want you to take a list of 10 and go, I'm going to go fix all 10 of these things, because that's not possible. But if we identify a couple, and then we get one thing to work on and one book to read relative to a particular area we're focused on, that's manageable. And then we set benchmarks along the way so they can track their progress. And as they're progressing, they get to give themselves a little attaboy. Hopefully management's doing the same thing, and it encourages them to continue to work on it.
Yeah. And the assessment tools help you identify those different areas. Are they specific, like you need to improve your closing ability?
Actually, they get even more specific than that because they are behaviorally focused. So we focus on things like listening skills.
Uh-huh.
There's one in there. We look at things like ego. A lot of people think ego is a bad thing, but if you're a salesperson, you need to have a good, healthy ego, not an over-the-top ego. We look at things like presentation style, your ability to walk into a room, hold people's attention, garner their respect fairly quickly, but not be overpowering. So it gets down to pretty much the DNA of a salesperson, and it lets us look at it on a behavioral level. Those are the types of things that we can help them over time change, but that doesn't happen overnight.
So very much like the PlayWorks group said that, Jim, we can't. This is not an episode. This thing is a journey.
It is a journey.
And I presume that sales training with Sandler is the same way?
It is. It's one of the things that makes Sandler unique in that we are reinforcement-based. Because it is about behavioral change, we know nobody's going to behave differently just because they sat through a 1 or 2 day seminar.
Absolutely.
Probably similar in the PlayWorks area. So what we do is through incremental training and reinforcement and coaching and accountability, we take them through anywhere from a 12 to 24 month training program that meets weekly, a couple hours a week, and they're learning small bite-sized pieces that they can take back and practice and get better at that. And then they'll come back the next week and get another bite.
So very interesting. For those who are out there, you said this is for big companies and small companies. How do you find your best clients?
I'm with these guys. I love referrals. Referrals close for business on average 80% of the time. So I love to live in that world. But I also know that if I'm one of the things that we teach all salespeople is good prospecting skills, and that includes things like cold calling, doing email campaigns, and then calling behind them. And I know if I'm going to teach somebody that, I have to do that too. Otherwise, I feel like that makes me a fraud.
Walk if the
I
walk, talk
exactly
the talk.
In my world, we call that being a product of the product. So I still do cold calling every week. I still don't like it, but I still do it because it's part of the deal. And it's interesting. I couldn't probably show you a big, long list of clients that I'd gotten as a result of cold calling. But when you do the right behavior, most people call it activity, we call it behavior. When you do the right behavior, like doing your networking, doing your cold calling, all the other things seem to fall into place. And the stars align in the prospecting universe. I'm not sure how that works, but I do know when I stop prospecting, the other good stuff stops happening. Crazy.
I think everybody in this room would say the same thing.
Absolutely.
Keeping that sales funnel filled is important. They want all buy, so you have to keep putting people in. So tell me, if you could pick your ideal client, what would they look like?
Typically, they're somewhere in the 5 to 50 million annual revenue range. They've probably got 2 or 3 or 10 outside salespeople. Doesn't really matter if they sell a product or a service, but it's a company who craves a little bit more structure and accountability, and they realize that they are going to have to commit some time, energy, effort to being able to change the way they currently do things. And I'll go back to what I said earlier, has to be committed leadership.
How about franchisees? Well, many customer-facing franchisees seem like you could consider a franchise as being one of your clients, for instance.
Absolutely.
Have you done that with any?
Oh, gosh. Trying to think. Off the top of my head, nobody's coming to mind. I know that there are other Sandler trainers out there who have worked in that world. I specifically haven't.
Yeah. But maybe you should. because everybody that's customer facing can't all be experts.
Very true. Okay. Well, if they were, then I'd be out of business, right?
Yeah. Good thing that everybody has some level of incompetence. and on the word incompetence, I think it's about time for me to end the show. if people want to get in touch with you, Alyssa, how do they do that?
They can do that a couple of ways. They can always give us a call at the office. The number is 770-475-3835, or they can find us. The website is georgiasales.sandler.com.
Well, thank you, everyone, for being in our studio this morning. I really appreciate it. And it's been very interesting. I've learned a lot about the UPS stores. I've learned a lot about having fun in business. And I've certainly learned a lot about sales. So thanks, everybody, and tune in again next week, same time.